Master Shuyun, Empty Cloud, was the modern day Chan Zen slash then master of China. He was born in the 1840s. He lived into the 1960s. He lived 120 years. So he really saw a very dramatic unfolding of Chinese history. A great master. His biography is worth taking a look at. And this is a discourse that he gave to some of his senior monks about how to practice Zen meditation. And you know, for the last 6 or 8 weeks, we just worked on the first paragraph, which are these four prerequisites. And I'll just list them now, but won't go into them. Didn't I finish last time? Right. So the first one, and again, these are prerequisites. He's saying, and like I've said before, these are essential foundation. You know, everybody wants to go into the deeper practice, the practice look directly in the mind, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Who am I? What am I? But without, you know, mindfulness, concentration, but without these foundations, the mind will always flicker. The commitment will always flicker. The intention will always be on and off. So it's important that we do this foundation work, so then the edifice, the Dharma edifice, that we are creating is on a firm ground. So the first one is, again, deep faith in the law of cause and effect. Second is strict observance of right action. Third is immovable trust or faith, both in our own true nature and in our capacity to awake. And the fourth, as he said, was choosing an appropriate Dharma door to enter. Again, if you could imagine that the truth of reality, the truth of our own being, the truth of experience, and all the qualities of our mind, they're available to everyone, right? But the question is, how do you mine it? So if you could imagine it, that all these treasures of the mind are a building, there are just 84,000 doors in Buddhism, right? But being out on the sidewalk and looking at all these doors and poking our head in this one and poking our head in that one does not get us into the building, right? At some point, we got to walk in. So at some point, it's good to be on the outside. It's good to reflect on this practice and this teaching and this teacher and this path, you know, when we're in that looking phase. But if you're someone who doesn't want to just be on the outside looking at this beautiful edifice, right? But you want to go inside where the action is, right? It's like being outside a church. You know, a lot of churches are very beautiful on the outside, and you can deeply appreciate the architecture of the church, of the temple, right? But the spiritual action is on the inside, right? We got to go through the door. And so Master Suyin is saying we have to choose a door to enter. And then he talks about some essentials of Zen practice, such as posture, such as regulation of the body and the breath. He talks about that one has to be aware of on one side, the mind not being too dull or torpid, that if one finds a mind is like that, one has to kind of wake it up. You know, open one's eyes, take a deep breath. If you're home, you can get up and walk around, throw some cold water on your face, jump around a little bit. But think about death. That's a great one. You know, just think about this could be the last day of your life, or you know, things like that. Or you know, so anyhow, there are things that one can do to kind of awaken the mind. On the other hand, he said sometimes the minds can be very agitated, right? And so therefore he recommends, you know, that you put everything down for a minute. Maybe you're making too much effort or pushing too hard. Rest for a few minutes, right? And then when you're more relaxed, then come back to the practice. Then he says an important thing, which again is very particular to Zen. He says, You'll have many experiences when you encounter sitting, again, Chan, C-H-A-N is just the Chinese, which became Zen when Chan, it's just when the character for Chan went to Japan, they pronounced it differently. They call it Zen. And Zen is what's well known. So when most, but Chan and Zen, Chan is again, Chinese Zen. So he talks about Chan, C-H-A-N. It says, when you encounter sitting Chan, you'll encounter have many experiences. However, do not attach to them, and they will therefore not interfere with you. If he quotes a proverb, see the extraordinary, yet do not think of it as being extraordinary, and the extraordinary will retreat. The same thing with pleasant and unpleasant experience. This is very central to the flavor of Zen. Okay? Because in some meditative traditions, spiritual traditions, having kind of all kinds of experiences is kind of what people are trying to get to, right? Having visions, seeing colors, hearing sounds, feeling like you're out of your body, you know, angelic music, you know, feel like you're flying, you know. I mean, some of that may sound kind of interesting for some of us. And many people would think that somehow that's worthy. That's something to hold on to. That's something to be really proud of, to tell everybody about my great realization. In Zen, those are all just considered impediments. Don't get caught up in them. They're just phenomena of the mind. Just another thing that's rising and passing away. Again, because in Zen, you're trying to cut through all the stuff, even the high stuff, even the spiritual stuff, to get to a place of equanimity, of openness of mind, of spaciousness of mind, where everything freely moves through and there's only awareness of, right? But there's no drama. So if you can imagine your minds without drama, that's kind of beginning to get there. And this is not a mind that is free of drama because it's made a decision to be free of drama, like a psychological decision. It's a mind that's free of drama because it is not attached to phenomena, the stuff, the things, whether external things or internal things like thoughts, feelings, perceptions, mind states. It's a mind that is very free. And because it is free, it is relaxed and comfortable. So, again, this is an important distinction. Now, you know, there's a famous, I don't know if it's famous, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, where he said, you know, the true miracle is not to walk on water, the true miracle is to walk on the earth. Right? We like the miracles. We think the miracles are what's important. I mean, it'd be an interesting experience to walk on water. Right? But it's really quite an interesting experience to walk on the earth, isn't it? When you're conscious, when you're aware, when you're present. When you live in awareness, you can walk on water, you can walk on land. It's all good. But if we think it's only good if you walk on water and walking on land is pedestrian, then we're caught. And we want to get uncaught, unstuck. So now he gets, so those are the kind of prerequisites. So now, the next section is called How to Start Practice. So this has all been preliminary. So now we're ready to begin to meditate. And he calls it distinction between host and guest. And again, this is something that's very singular to Zen. So he says, how should one begin to practice? In the Sarangama assembly, Sarangama is a reference to one of the great sutras. Sutras are these texts in Buddhism that are purported to be actual discourses of the Buddha. So when you see something called a sutra, in most cases what they're saying is this is a teaching that the Buddha gave and was passed on orally for hundreds of years until they were finally written down. So he says, in the Sarangama assembly, referring to this incident that happened in this Sarangama Sutra, Kaundinya, the honored one, mentioned the two words guest and dust. And now Shuyun, Empty Cloud, says, this is where beginners, and that's us, this is where beginners should begin their practice. So in the sutra it says, a traveler who stops at an inn may stay overnight or get something to eat. When he or she is finished or rested, he or she packs up and continues their journey. For they have no more time to tarry any longer. Right? So the guest comes and then goes. Right? That's the guest. But if you were the host, you would have no place to go. Thus I reason, he who does not stay, she who does not stay, is called the guest, because not staying is the essence of being a guest. He or she who stays is called a host. I mean, simple stuff, but everybody... I mean, but we're getting to an important point. Is that clear? The difference between a host and a guest. The host comes and goes. The host stays. The guest comes and goes. Again, on a clear day, when the sun rises and the sunlight enters a dark room through an opening, one can see dust in an empty space. The dust is moving, but the space is still. That which is clear and still is called space. That which is moving is called dust. Because moving is the essence, the function of dust, right? Are we clear? It's kind of simple, isn't it, right? So there's hosts that stay and guests that come and visit and just stay briefly and then go on their way, right? They have a journey. But the host stays put. Right? There's empty space and there's dust. And when the light is right, we see the dust moving through empty space. It's the function of dust is to move about. Right? But the empty space remains empty space. Is there anybody that I've lost? No, it's kind of simple. Now he says, there's a point he's going to be making here. Guest and dust refer to illusory thoughts, whereas host and space refer to self-nature. So Master Empty Cloud is giving us, we could say, a paradigm, a framework in how to approach our meditative experience. Right? So Jerry is the host. His illusory thoughts. Illusory, why? Why does Master Empty Cloud call thoughts illusory? Why doesn't he just call them thoughts? He calls them illusory thoughts. Illusory means what? Why are they illusory? Anybody have a slightest idea?
They're self-created in your mind.
Well, they are not. They're an illusion. You can't find them. They're not a. Yes. What?
They have no
right. They have no permanent nature. They have no substance to them. They're illusory. They're an illusion. They appear, but they have no substance, like an illusion. This is important. We're not saying that thoughts don't have an illusory existence, right? They do. Right? Like, you know, and the analogy is like a bubble, like a rainbow, right? The rainbow appears in the sky. We all see it. We can all appreciate it, right? But if you've ever chased after the rainbow, what do you know? Have you ever found the rainbow? Anybody ever see a beautiful rainbow and jump in their car and drive to it? Nobody ever tried that before somebody told you how it works? You can't find it, can you? You can see it when it appears, but it's an illusory in the sense that it's just a product of what? Moisture and light, and that's all. Causes and conditions come together, and yet gone. So, illusory thoughts. Now, this is very important. Because if you leave here tonight with an established sense, let's say, of yourself, I am the host of my body mind, right? You know, think about being the host in your house, right? Somebody comes to visit, right? And then what? At a certain point, they what? They leave. Now, when they're packed up and they're at the front door and they're saying goodbye, do you say, oh no, I'm going with you? Yeah. You know, I'm signing on with your life. Right? I want to be the guest too. You laugh, why? Because the host what? When you're the host what? You stay home. Right? And you want, depending, exactly right. Some illusory thoughts, we probably want to them to go more quickly than others, like guest Jerry's. The analogy holds up. But the bottom line is, we understand that guests will leave, and when they leave, we say what to them? Goodbye. We don't go with them. We don't follow them. We don't run after them. We don't get in our car, you know, and you know, and see where they're going, do we? We what? Bye-bye. And we close the door. And we do what? We go on to our next life event, don't we? So this analogy of host and guest is simple and yet profound, but it is a paradigm to guide us in our meditation if you begin to experience yourself as the host, and that thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, images, right, emotion, you know, all that phenomena of mind are simply what? Temporary guests that are passing through that which stays which is your mind nature, your true nature. Right? Your awareness, we could call it. Now, we have to ask ourselves, do I really act the host in my mind? Right? Or do I chase after and get involved in every guest who shows up without discrimination? I mean, I'll hook in anybody in, right? I just drag him in off the street. I'll stay involved with a lousy guest, a rotten guest, an unsatisfactory guest, a pain-producing guest, right? I'll keep him around for hours and days, won't I? I never show him the door. And if I do show him the door, I'll go running after him an hour later. All right? Can you see what that would be like? Or just think about all the guests you've had in your life. What if you never let them go? I mean, and they're all still in your house. It would get kind of what? Uncomfortable, wouldn't it? A little crowded. A little tight. Everybody kind of be tripping over everybody else, wouldn't they? Think about your mind. Is that what it's like? Are you present simply to one guest at a time? And when they leave, do you let them go? Or do you just hoard them or run after them? Right? It's kind of simple when you think about it. This is a beautiful analogy, isn't it? Now, it's an analogy that's useful, but it's more than that. It is true. Okay? It is absolutely, totally true. Right? That our mind's awareness, our awareness, this right now, is what is constant. And in the same way that we could say, like his analogy for air or space and dust, that the air space is what is the medium through which the dust, right, is moving. But the space is what is constant. We can also say that our consciousness, our awareness, is also what is constant. And all our thoughts, all our feelings, all our perceptions, everything is what is moving through, passing through. That is the truth. And I say that not because it's a dogmatic truth, or because it was said by the Buddha or said by the masters or it's in the sutra. It is true because any of us can just sit down, cross our legs, and watch our mind and see the same exact thing. Right? You sit down for a half an hour and you will see what? Guests coming and going. Huh? Guests coming and going. Good guess, bad guess, silly guess, stupid guess. Right? Hungry guess. Right? Thirsty guess. Happy guess. Unhappy guess. Right? Relaxed guess. Irritated guess. Right? They're just coming and going all the time, aren't they? So this is the truth. Again, truth, again, not like dogmatic truth, but truth meaning it is common to our experience. We can all experience this truth. So guest and dust refer to illusory thoughts, whereas host and space refer to self-nature, the nature of who and what we are. That the permanent host does not follow the guest in her comings and goings illustrates that permanent self-nature does not follow illusory thoughts in their fleeting rise and fall. Like, this is for those of us who didn't get it the first time, you see. So now he's saying it a little differently. He's very helpful, empty cloud. Okay? Right. So because as host I can see my guest go, right? That means that I am not the guest, am I? Because I can see them come and go, and I can see, oh, here comes another guest, right? Here's my 4 o'clock, right? So because there is an awareness that can see the coming goings of phenomena, the comings and goings of thoughts and feelings and perceptions, because there is a host that can see the coming and going of all these various guests, that means what? That the host is not the guest. Right? Because, you know, we can see the dust moving around through space, forming little forms, thicker, not thicker, moving slower, faster. We realize that the space is not the dust, is it? We know that, don't we? See how simple it is? It is so simple. We all know it. Both these analogies, there is nobody, is there anybody here who disagrees with me and says, no, host and guest are the same? No, we know from the point they're how different they are. Now, they need each other. I mean, that's another whole issue but for what we're dealing with now. So what the practice of meditation, what the practice of awareness, what the practice of mindfulness, what the practice of insight is helping us see is just that we see with the same clarity what is going on in our own mind, this function of host and guest and dust and space. So we can be at ease with the coming and going of these illusory thoughts because we know they're just what? Guests. Right, Jerry? When Jerry has a guest that he, it's not an easy guest, right? Knowing that they're only going to be here for 3 days makes it tolerable, doesn't it? You know, they're only going to be here for 3 days. I can tolerate that, right? We all know that, right? Okay. Knowing that every thought, every feeling, no matter how difficult or painful, is just temporary, impermanent by its own nature, is liberating, right? But if we think it's going to go on forever, or if we grab onto the guest and keep them forever, then the suffering gets significant. Can you see that? Then the suffering, right? I mean, for 3 days you can tolerate that person, right? But, if they decide they're going to stay and you say okay, it's going to get worse, isn't it? It's like that. It is that simple. All we need is what? To understand that and to have trained the mind enough through your meditative practice that you have learned not to grasp at, not to attach to, not to hold on to these illusory thoughts. You meditate enough, you watch your mind long enough, you look into your mind long enough, and you will see this over the years more and more clearly, and it will become easier and easier for you to be at ease with the coming and going of these guests. Right? You know they come, and you know they go. Right? It's not a big deal anymore. But when you make a big deal about when they come, you know, some people just make a big deal about things. Right? Somebody's coming to visit, and let's say, you know what I mean, and they're talking about it and worrying about it or irritated about it for weeks beforehand, you know. And then the person comes and they're, you know, putting on a good face, but behind them, ah, can't wait till I leave, you know. Right? Just make ourselves miserable. They come and they go. So again, it is the practice of mindfulness. It is the practice of meditation that reveals this truth to us. That it's no longer just only a concept or an idea, but it's a known reality. The same way many of us, having been host, you know, been the host, and also many of us having been guests, we understand about being host and guest, right? We kind of get that. Oh yeah. I understand the difference between host and guests and host day and guest go. I understand how to deal with good guests. I understand how to deal with not the best kind of guests, right? Because we have experience. Through the practice of meditation, through the practice of mindfulness, we will get experience with our mind and with these thoughts and with these feelings that we attach to, that we elaborate, that we blow up, that we cling to, that we manipulate, that we obsess over. That the permanent host does not follow the guest in her comings and goings illustrates that permanent self-nature does not follow illusory thoughts in their fleeting rise and fall. Therefore it was said, this is the master Su Yin then quoting some text, he's just in parentheses, if one is unaffected by all things, then there will be no obstructions even when one is constantly surrounded by things. This is a big one, isn't it? Because we say what? When we talk to each other about the things in our life, we say what? They're doing this to us, aren't they? They're making us feel like this, or they're making us do this, or they're getting us all riled up, or they're stressing us out, or they're, right? True. They're getting us worried, they're getting us scared, they're getting us down, they're getting us, right? We think that our surroundings control us, right? And that our actions and our emotions and our moods and everything are the result of all these externalities. Right? Isn't that what we think? Isn't that the way we talk to one another about our life and why our mind is the way it is? But the master says, if one is unaffected by all things, then there will be no obstructions even when one is constantly surrounded by things. See, this is the, again, the profound wisdom of this Dharma, right? Because most of us, you know, we're into changing the external, right? If I can just get rid of the things in my life, the people in my life, right? Then I'll be happy. Then I'll be at peace, right? If I can just change all the people in the world, if I could just get all the people in the stores and all the people in my office and all the people on the road and all the people in this political party and that political, right? If I could just get rid of them all, then what? Then my mind would dip. I'd be at peace. I'd be happy. But that's a lot of work, isn't it? And it may never be accomplished. So he says, one simply has to be unaffected by these things, which means unaffected in my mind. Then there will be no obstructions, even when I'm constantly surrounded by things. We do not have to let things upset us, do we? Do we? We don't have to look if we don't want to. We don't have to get angry if we don't want to. The moving dust does not block the clear, empty space. Illusory thoughts which rise and fall by themselves do not hinder the self-nature of suchness. Suchness is one of these Buddhist terms for just the nature of things. Things are just as they are. How are they? They're just like this. Suchness. It's one of those words. It's like you can't describe it, so you call it, it's just suchness. Or it's like, you know, what is the nature of things? Thusness. And it's like just saying, it's just what it is. It can't be described. You know, what is the nature of space? Just this. So in Buddhism, they say suchness, such as it is. The moving dust does not block clear, empty space. Illusory thoughts rise and fall by themselves and do not hinder the self nature of suchness. Remember the guest? No matter if they're a good guest or a bad guest, whether they stay an hour or stay a week, right? They're just moving through the house, right? The house doesn't change. The rooms don't change. The decor doesn't change, right? The house is still there, and the guest is just moving through it. And when they're gone, what? Not a trace. If you choose to remember them or not, that's your business. But the house is still the house, right? Another way to see it is to think of a mirror, to think of your mind, the nature of your mind, like a mirror. Right? The mirror reflects beauty, it reflects ugliness, right? You can make an angry face at the mirror, you can make a smiley face at the mirror, right? You can yell at the mirror, and curse at the mirror, shake your fist at the mirror. You can kiss the mirror. You know, you can. The mirror reflects all those images, doesn't it? And yet never changes. Right? Always reflects purely what is before it. This is the nature of our mind. So what he's saying here, and remember number three in the prerequisites, the belief that you have this pure, immaculate, true nature, Buddha nature mind, and that you can realize it. This is what this is about. Right? That which is aware of the comings and goings, the space, right? The sky, you know, a plane flies through it, a little Piper Cub, a big jet plane, a war plane, a hot air balloon, right? Does that affect the nature of the air, of space? It just moves through, right? A little sparrow, a big eagle. Space is unaffected by that, right? It doesn't affect its nature, its openness. Things just pass through. In the Dzogchen teachings, they talk about the sky-like mind. Our mind is like the sky. Right? Open, vast. Right? And things, everything can pass through it. You can have a beautiful, clear day, you can have a hurricane. But does that change space? Any questions about it? I mean, is it confusing or is it kind of simple? I mean, even just at the conceptual level. I mean, obviously, Shuyin, the practice in the meditation hall is about the realization of these, so it becomes an experience. But the reason he sets it out like this, as all teachers have set it out, is it's important that we have a kind of a picture, a paradigm, so at least we understand what we're doing in the meditation hall. Oh, when I sit in the meditation hall, and obviously the more I can do it throughout my life, when I sit down, I take the position of host. And the phenomena that arises, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, sounds, sights, I see them all as guests. I just let them come and go. I see them as dust moving through my mind. I sit in that kind of understanding and awareness. Can you do it overnight? No. Maybe some people can. Took the Buddha 6 years. But can one over time? Of course. But again, these kinds of teachings are kind of showing us the way, giving us something to hold on to, some way of understanding our experience, so we can suffer less, so we can be happier, freer, more open, more spacious, more relaxed, or more comfortable in our own skin. So we will continue with these teachings of Master Empty Cloud. Empty Cloud is it's a very Zenish name, isn't it? Right? Because the cloud, again, you see a cloud and what? It looks like it's solid, doesn't it? But we know if we get up in the airplanes, we find what? It's not solid. It looks solid, like a thought. Its solidity is illusory. It's just forming and reforming according to causes and conditions. Right? Comes together as a cloud, forms, reforms, quote unquote, appears to disappear, then appears again. So his name was Master Empty Cloud. It's a good name.